Okay, Andreas, welcome to the show, my friend. We've been trying for quite a long time to get someone on from Sweden and from the, well, and to find out anything about what's happening up in the Nordic countries. We're so pleased to have you on air. You are a member of the Nordic Front, I believe. Could you tell us about that movement and what you're trying to achieve there, my friend?
Yes, thank you very much for having me on. It is called the Nordic Resistance Movement, and it is a pan-Nordic national socialist struggle organization that is looking to unite the Nordic countries into one national socialist state. A member of the movement. I run a podcast for the movement, the English-speaking podcast called Nordic Frontier. And I'm myself from Sweden, where the organization, I would say, is the biggest. It started in Sweden. It started 21 years ago in 1997. And since then, we have been expanding and building different branches in the different Nordic countries. And now we're established in all of the North. So it's looking pretty good now. We're growing very much. And as you know, there's quite some chaos going up here in Scandinavia. It's an adventure for sure.
I was going to ask, because all we seem to get out of Sweden at the moment is that it's the rape capital of the world. I believe it's one in four. Can you confirm that?
Yes, it is pretty bad. And it's being silenced by the media and largely ignored by our law enforcement. It's a very low priority in solving rape cases and actual sexual harassment. You might be familiar with the hashtag MeToo campaign. That kind of stuff went down well with the Swedes, had a lot of attention, and a lot of women had their, you know, crying out about being sexually harassed. But the Swedish women that are actually being gang raped by racial strangers coming from North Africa and the Middle East, they're being largely ignored. And in the mainstream, they are never describing these perps. They're always blurring their faces. Well, at the same time, they might just dox people of our movement and similar nationalists that are speaking up against mass immigration and this tide of rape that we have going on. But we've had alternative media, I would say, in Sweden is very large and it's growing.
Good.
Because of this, because of the mainstream media, not they're putting the lid on everything. So yeah. It's kind of a, yeah.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people will kind of walk up to Sweden, probably mainly through Red Ice Radio. You're probably well aware of them, and they started covering a lot of this.
Yeah.
And this goes back to when the problems really started. Was that probably from the mid-90s onwards, was it around that time, when your organization pretty much started to set up?
Yeah, I would say the big change came all the way back in 1975, where our constitution basically was subverted, and it started giving special rights to minorities in Sweden and declaring Sweden as a multicultural country. And from then on, they were opening the border to non-Europeans. And then when they came to Sweden, they were then encouraged to exercise their own culture and their own religions. So since then, it's been growing. And as you say, late 80s, mid-90s, that's when you start seeing the effect of this. You know, it took a few decades. And now, you know, it's far beyond the pale. With the same kind of problems. It's just escalated like crazy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, our movement got started, and you had, you know, parties like the Sweden Democrats there from the late 80s as well. They were the ones that spoke out very early against mass immigration.
Mm-hmm. So are you a political movement, Andreas, in as much as you're looking to gain seats in parliament, in the Swedish parliament, or is it just a pressure group at this time?
Yes, I would say that the movement started out as a strictly activist movement, spreading the national socialism on the streets. But we have, over the years, expanded, and we're willing to take whatever path it takes to make change, basically. But we want revolutionary change. We don't just want to get into parliament and start voting for this and that. We want everything basically raised to the ground and built back up in our image. And this year, in 2016, we launched our parliamentary branch. And that's what we choose to call it, because we don't want to call ourselves a party. Yeah. It is a branch of our movement that is specifically focused on parliamentary politics. And this year was the first time we ran for election in 2018. So that, as an explicit National Socialist Party, and then running up against parties like the Sweden Democrats and Alternative for Sweden as well. So we would say that we've always been political, but now we have a parliamentary branch as well.
How did you fare in that election, the first time?
We got, in numbers, not very well for Sweden's standards. We got 2,000 votes in total. And it was, from a nationalistic point of view, the election was a complete disappointment, I would say.
Okay.
And I've been bringing it up on the show as well about how the government that was elected is basically what we've been having for the last 4 years anyway. So it seems like no one is discontent with the chaos, whereas, you know, you might be a bit conspiratorial and think that, you know, been meddling with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. But we got 2,000 votes, and we think that if 2,000 people in Sweden are willing to vote for a radical alternative that basically want nothing to do with the liberal parliamentarism. Yeah, I think it's very good in actual people numbers.
Yeah. When's the next election due?
Yeah, it's every fourth year. So okay. This was the election for the next 4 years then.
Yes.
And it's been 2 months now, and Parliament hasn't been able to assemble a government yet, because the election was so bland. Like, all the parties, there was no clear winner. Okay. So now they're just you know, arguing about who's going to get the stick and who's not.
That's incredible.
But it's I'm quite surprised, Andres, that you were allowed to stand for election, because you'd be seen as many as extremists.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I am quite surprised you were allowed to actually stand. You know, how did the media and all that treat you over there?
Oh, they love to write about us, but they love to speak about us, but they never like to speak to us. That's how they treat us.
Yeah.
And speaking of banning, we were recently banned in Finland. Our Finnish branch was banned by, would you say, the Court of Appeals. So we had a first civic court, and then we appealed that, and now it was run through the Court of Appeals. So the movement is officially banned in Finland. So, and that's quite interesting, seeing as Finland has a history of National Socialism that they're not ashamed of at all, you know, and it's a very nationalistic country. Mm-hmm. So it would be more probable that we would get banned in Sweden. And they're working on it, definitely. But there is no legal support for it yet. So they have to start shuffling the laws around to make it fit their agenda. But I'm sure they're going to make it happen. And it's only going to force our members and the people that sympathize with us, it will force us to take other measurements. You know, we're not going to go away just because we're going to be illegal. You know,
sure.
We have to do something, so we'll do something else.
Mm-hmm. And they're still going in Finland, I take it, just underground.
They are. So far, they're going. It's 1 month left until it's officially illegal now, and they're not sure what part of the organization is going to be illegal. Let's say, is the symbol going to be illegal? Are the members allowed to congregate with each other? I don't know. You had National Action, for example, in England. When they were banned, they were basically forbidden from socializing with each other, as I understand it.
Yeah.
And well, so we don't know yet what it means.
Yeah, they were declared a terrorist organization, so there you go.
Yeah.
So that's all they have to do is just bring it under anti-terrorism legislation, you see, and then they can use those laws, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what about in Norway and Denmark, and what about Iceland? Do you have an organization there as well?
Yes, we have a small group of activists, not an official branch, but activists, yeah. And we have a Icelandic website as well for the Icelanders.
Yeah. And how do you see things panning out in Iceland at the moment, Andreas? Because we're hearing stories that bankers are being jailed and the country has started to thrive because they've moved the Jewish banks out. I don't know if that's the case or not.
Mm. Yes, somewhat. I've had that explained to me. I'm not exactly sure I remember what he said, but they did kick some Jewish bankers out. But as I understood it, it wasn't as radical as you might think. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they had boycotting Israel campaign.
Yeah.
And there were certain products there that they were going to... And that raised a lot of headlines as well. So something is going on in Iceland, and I think Iceland is what Sweden used to be like 30 years ago when it comes to white people. So it's probably a very nice place to be.
Yeah, I think it's the last outpost of Europe, really. You would say it's an ethno state, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the last one, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I mean, even Ireland up to 25 years ago was like that too. 20 years ago even was pretty much 98% white. Yeah. And sadly, that's decreased, you know, but we're waking up to it, you know. We're looking at, you know, people over, you know, in Britain and Ireland, we're looking at what's going on in Scandinavia and in Germany and France and also in the UK. And we're beginning to see now that our country's been taken over. And if we want to keep our culture, our history, our heritage and all that alive, we've got to stand up because it's going to go. And I did hear, Andres, is this true or not, but within, say, 10 years, Swedes will be an ethnic minority in their own country. Is that correct? Would you go along with that?
Well, I'm hearing 2050.
2050, yeah.
Yeah, I read that a while ago. Mm-hmm. But it's already a reality in a city like Malmö. Mm-hmm. Swedes are a minority in certain age groups, but it's quite a wide span, like from youngsters up to maybe the mid-40s, Swedes are in minority. So that's going to get a lot worse in just 10 years. So Malmö is basically the Middle East by now. There is not very much resistance. Like, you see, in Scania, which is the state, that's the county, I would call it, the county where Malmö is, Sweden Democrats are very popular there. Sweden Democrats recently got a majority in one of the municipalities there, and that's basically historical. But we're not big fans of Sweden Democrats because they're quite... Jew-friendly and Zionists, and they are basically anti-Islam. Yeah. And we think that anti-Islam isn't really going to do it at this point. You know, we have to talk about race, we have to talk about ethnicity, about Swedes being white, you know, primarily.
Yeah.
They advocate things like open Swedishness, so they think that... And Mohammed, if he'll just eat meatballs and dance around the midsummer pole, then he's just as Swedish as you. So,
I don't think so.
No, but that's you know, that's their rhetoric, and it's very popular for Swedes that have been acclimatized to multiculturalism because they have brown friends, they have racial strangers as family members, so they feel like Sweden Democrats is a safe option for them because they're invested in multiculturalism. But we're saying that multiculturalism will never work, even though you love your racial strangers as friends and as, you know, in-laws or whatever. Mixing is not going to be good for us. It might be good for them, but it's not going to be good for us.
Yeah. I see that a lot across Europe. You see the AfD in Germany, you know, even Orban in Hungary, in Austria and in Italy. They're becoming more kind of conservative, right-wing kind of organizations. But as you said, they will only concentrate on Islam. And they won't, of course, talk about the tribe, you know, who are behind all of this, who are, you know. And, you know, the famous Barbara Leonard Spector, who's in your country and still there, I suppose. You know, I mean, it's just so blatantly obvious who's behind all of this. Yeah. But for some reason, a lot of these groups will just won't go there. So that, to me, just tells me they are controlled opposition, just totally, you know.
Yeah. Because you even if you talk about Islam, having racial strangers within your nation is going to mix you out of existence no matter what. Doesn't matter. Because you see a party like Alternative for Sweden. I'm not sure if you're aware of them, but they're basically like Alternative for Deutschland, but in Sweden. They ran a quite aggressive campaign when it comes to repatriation. And that's our heart issue, our key issue, is stopping the invasion and starting the repatriation. And they went really hard on the repatriation bit because they saw that they could get ahead the Sweden Democrats if they would just push that, because that's what people want at this point. But they're only pointing to the dysfunctional strangers. They're only pointing to people that are criminals, rapists, and people that are on welfare. They're welfare leechers. But it doesn't matter for us. It doesn't matter if the racial stranger is a good guy or a bad guy. If there's too many of them among us, we're going to stop existing within a certain time span. So they're a threat to our existence no matter what. And for us, it's not about, you know, hurting feelings or anything. It's about saving ourselves and looking to our own interests as a Nordic people.
Exactly, yeah. So it's basically zero tolerance for immigration. And about repatriation, how would you go about doing that? Because that would be quite difficult, wouldn't it, to actually get people to go back? Would you kind of convince them that it would be better for them to go back to their own countries? Or would it be a case of using force? Because that could turn quite nasty, couldn't it?
Yeah, it's a very tricky question, and I think... We don't get into detail in our party program on that, but I would say that it's not a zero tolerance policy. There is some sort of magic percentage where people can live as minorities in a country. But, for example, minorities shouldn't have special benefits as it is in Sweden today. Yeah. As a minority in Sweden, you have more rights than a Swede, you know. Swedes will get punished for criticizing minorities. And that's, you know, completely upside down. So that's what happens when you have, I don't know if you're allowed to say Jews, but when you have Jews advocating for minorities, then they are splitting up the nation, you know, and they do it purposely for the host nation to start sympathizing more with the minorities than their own in-group. And this is what's happened in Sweden. Swedes have totally lost their own identity. They are questioning if there even is a thing as a Swede. So I think when you come to a magic number, like now we're seeing maybe almost up to a third of racial strangers in Sweden. So you have like almost 3 million racial strangers among 7 million Swedes, or 6.5 million Swedes and some Finns. But with those numbers, they start getting really uppity. You know, they start claiming things. They start building more mosques. They start having more prayer calls. They start talking about Sharia courts, things like that. They have illegal circumcisions, all kinds of stuff like that. Because they are growing in numbers, they're getting bolder. And we know this because this is ethnic. This is not religion. This is their people taking over our country, basically colonizing Sweden.
And it's the same across the Western world, Andreas, let's be honest. It's the same here. Everyone's got rights, part of the white man. It's an absolute all-out attack on European Christian culture. And that's what it is. You're suffering the same as us. We don't get no rights to say anything, but they can do whatever they want. I'm just wondering if there is, at this stage now, do we have a political solution, or are we looking at civil war? Because I'm thinking maybe civil war within a couple of years now. It's getting that bad. And we're losing our platforms as well. That's another thing.
Yeah, we already have, what's it called, low-intensive civil war in Sweden. We have racially estranged gangs running around shooting each other in drug wars.
Wow.
And they have basically prostitution cartels and weapon smuggling and things like that. We have completely wide open borders when it comes to people and material. So weapons are being shipped in right across the border, coming with the ferry. There has been people documenting the border booths where people are supposed to be working.
Yeah.
And they're completely empty. And you have trucks just driving into Sweden all day long. And it's when you look at that, that you just, you know, it's kind of a lag. You know, you're going to see the effect of these things being smuggled into Sweden a week later or a month later. So we've had, you know, police stations being blown up, police stations being burnt down. In these areas where Swedes are not welcome, you know, they see the Swedish police and anything resembling Sweden's infrastructure, like governments, all the ambulances, fire trucks, post vans. These things are being attacked in these so-called no-go zones. So police are not allowed to operate in these areas without being attacked. So it's when you see that kind of stuff, you realize that we're already at civil war. It's just that Swedes aren't fighting it.
Right.
You know, you have racial strangers are already taking over landmass, geographical areas in Sweden, and no one's doing anything about it. So I'm seeing if Sweden had the political will, we could clean this up really fast, no problem. We're very clever people. We're Aryans. We could do this within a year. We could start cleaning this thing up. But we don't have the political will, and I think they're dancing around a powder keg. Hmm. Whereas if a situation in a certain neighborhood that's especially bad, if the police starts putting hard against hard in that area, they'll start pulling out their weapons and start shooting because they have weapons, they have grenades, you know, that's not a problem. When that happens, yeah, then you might see the civil war coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think, Andreas, that because Sweden has always been a kind of a socialist country and it was always like a cradle to grave where the state looked after everybody, it had a very good standard of living, much higher than most European countries actually had, and it softened them up. Would you agree with that? So
yeah.
When this whole thing happened then, that people, oh, we have to bring in all the poor old refugees because look here in Sweden, everything's so good, we can look after them, it's great. Do you think that, you know, did they kind of just slowly but surely pull that Viking kind of spirit out of these people? Do you think that's what happened?
Yeah, we might, yeah, that might have been the case, that the social democracy softened
people. Social democracy. Yeah.
And I know that Hitler, he was not a fan of social democracy in its cradle, but our Swedish social democracy was inspired by the Third Reich, and it adopted a lot of the social care programs that they had, like, for example, benefit programs for unemployed, things like mm-hmm. that. But we developed an own model that was called the Folkhome, mm-hmm. which, like you're talking about, the cradle-to-grave program. That's basically what it is. So you would be taken care of by the state if something would happen, mm-hmm. but at the cost of paying very high taxes. You would get all these services, making sure you were all right. Mm-hmm. This Folkhome has now been dismantled, because we have no money anymore. We're living on debt. We're living on loans. And these loans are given away to the invaders coming in. And none is being left for healthcare, police, fire, departments and schools. Mm. All of that stuff is now completely collapsing, I would say. But it's worse. The thing is, it's worse in areas like Malmö, Gothenburg, and Stockholm. There are areas in Sweden where you're not as affected yet.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because, you know, when I remember Sweden, you know, growing up, you know, what we heard of it, it was always a quiet, peaceful country. Mm. Nothing very much really happened there. It was virtually crime-free. The only thing we really heard about was ABBA, you know?
Yeah.
The music sensation was ABBA, you know? And
The Beautiful Woman.
And The Beautiful Woman, yeah. And it's you know, it's sad to see that what's happened. It's just... and that nobody now kind of looks back to those days when everything was civilized. People looked after each other. There was a sense of community. Okay, it was kind of a socialistic country, but, you know, just this kind of like, oh, we have to help everybody now. It's hard. It's heartbreaking to see it, you know. It really is.
Yeah. But on that point you were saying about making us soft, I would say that is a conundrum with socialism. And the Marxist socialism that I would say constitutes the social democracy. Yeah. And our kind of socialism would be national, for our people, but it would give, you would have rights and obligations for this system. Yeah. Everyone will have to contribute in order to get a piece of the pie. Mm-hmm. And this is what social democracy didn't do. It didn't put the load on the citizen to contribute. They just gave it away in the end. They just collected the taxes and just started giving it away willy-nilly. And now it's so obvious when it's being given to complete strangers from the other side of the planet. They just arrived yesterday, and you're giving them a full month's pay just to be. Just to be around. I mean, that's insane. So, yeah, it has made Swedes very soft, I would say. We're also peace damaged, as you would say, because we haven't been fighting wars for hundreds of years by now. Mm-hmm. And I have a theory when it comes to Sweden's racial stock and the Second World War, and the First and Second World War, because there's a saying that the Jews were saying, the best of the Goyim shall die, in the First and the Second World War, where white brothers would fight it out and just kill each other. And who do you send to war? You send the strongest, the smartest, the best men to fight it out. And they murdered each other in the tens of millions in these European countries. But Sweden was left alone. Mm-hmm. And Sweden was left alone to build its infrastructure and kind of get a head start after the war, building this socialist system. But it's made us mentally weak, this peacetime and this demandless socialism has made us like psychologically weak.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think that's the same right across the Western world, you know. It physically and mentally, I see it in... I was running a football team a couple of years ago, or I finished at the end of last year, and the lads, you know, they're just so weak. I would say they're smashing lads, don't get me wrong, but like all kids are. But it seems to me that when you are 18, these kids are like 2 years behind, at least 2 years behind. An 18-year-old to me now is like a 16-year-old, and a 16-year-old is like a 14-year-old. So they really have softened us up. But then I think that's our Achilles heel. I've said it before, our Achilles heel is that we're too compassionate. And we seem to be now to be waiting to the last second before we're going to do something. How is the, I assume, have you got laws in Sweden, Andreas, regarding Holocaust denial?
No. So we're quite lucky on that front.
Okay.
And we're making good use of that.
Brilliant.
So to speak.
Well, we're making good use of it in the UK. I mean, we've still got, apparently, we've got free speech here, but we've not, because if people speak out, they go to jail. So it's happening, but, of course, it's kept out of the mainstream.
So, yeah, you've had a lot of problems with people being arrested for, well, it's these anti-terrorist laws, I think, that they apply.
Yeah, well, in Ireland, I think we're still a bit like you in Sweden. We can still say things, but the problem is that you could lose your job, the media will come down on you and all of that kind of stuff. So
exactly.
They'll get you that way, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll tell you this. Yeah. It's never been easier to be a national socialist in Sweden than it is now. This is the time to stand up. Yeah, because we are normalizing our message. Definitely. We're reaching out to tens of thousands of Swedes weekly with our radio and our TV programs. Mm-hmm. So we're just, and our street activism as well. We want to meet people and show them that we are, well, normal human beings, but that we are smart, that we know why we think the things that we think and why they're wrong, you know, why they have the wrong perception of us. And this normalization process has made it possible for a lot of our members, especially now during our election campaign, we had to be on the streets. People had to be on the streets and hand out flyers and talk to people in order to garner votes. So a lot of people have stepped out of the shadows. So these doxing campaigns that the Antifas do, they don't have the same effect anymore because no one cares. Yeah. Like, they can write whatever they want. We have so many public figures at this point.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, that's important. Of course, the Antifa tend to kind of portray you guys as, you know, wearing tattoos with swastikas all over your head and skinheads and all that kind of thing. And you're just ordinary guys, you know, out there just putting out the message and saying, look, just look around you guys, look around you. Your country's falling to pieces. What are you going to do about it? You know, here is the solution.
Yeah, and, I would say that there's definitely a mixed bag. You know, we have a lot of the skinheads from the 90s sympathizing with us, and but we've stepped away from the subculture. You know, we don't accept subcultural clothing and things like that at our marches or anything. But the people are still there, and their thoughts are still there. So we definitely want these people with us. And these people were the ones fighting really early in the game. So they definitely have the fire. They have, you know, the will to fight. So they shouldn't be discounted, even though, you know, the skinhead movement kind of gives you a bad taste.
Because that's what happened in the UK, Graham, with the National Front. And, you know, they got a bad image because they were, you know, out in the street and going Sig Heil and all the rest of it.
Well, that's what they portrayed on the TV, Brian.
Yeah, that's what they portrayed on TV, I know.
Yeah.
But that, you know, as I said, if you tone down that and you just get out there amongst the ordinary people who can see what's going on around them, they can see that they are becoming second-class citizens in their own land, and just put across the normal, you know, sensible, reasonable debate. And to people and said, just here it is. Here we are offering a solution to take our country back. And that can work. I think that's the best way of doing it. I think if we're too much in people's faces, it kind of, they run away. If we just, you know, gently kind of engage with people and just show them what you're about, what the problems are, people were going to go, yeah, I don't understand what you're saying, and they'll start to listen, you know, and then the message will spread.
They do that.
Far better, yeah.
Go ahead, Andreas.
Now, I was just going to say about talking to people like that, it's very rare, or not rare, I would say, but it's quite often you get stuck on their imagined image of us, you know, because they come up and they're really aggressive and angry at you for being a Nazi. Before you get past that, sometimes you don't, you know, they just walk on being really angry. But once you get past that, like you say, they do understand our points because we talk very reasonable points. And it's usually talk about immigration, or you talk about, well, when you can, you talk about the Holocaust as well. But those are very touchy issues, but it's very rare that you get to talk about what we actually want to achieve with our politics, because we have a vision as well. We're not just presenting problems. We have problems and we have a solution, and then we have a vision for the future. So sometimes you get lucky and you get to talk about that as well.
Yeah. And just, you go out in the streets with flyers, and how are people reacting to you with this? Are people taking them and reading them, or are people just going, "Oh, you're a bunch of crazies," and walk away? What's the reaction there?
I would say, like, I'm from the very far north in Sweden, so we've had less activity up here than down south, obviously. But recently, since I joined and some other people came together, our group has been growing consistently. And now for the election, we ran for the local municipality up here in my hometown. So we were on the streets every day for 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, talking to people. And they got to know us, you know. They got to know that we were on the streets every day. We had an election tent there where we had our flyers and our paper that we were handing out, with the local party program that we'd written for Boden, the town that is here. And you can see that when they see us that much, you know, they start softening up. Even the most hostile people, they start laughing at us and start making jokes, because we're these evil Nazis, but we're just nice people.
Yeah.
So in the end, we had, you know, a lot of people voting for us in this small town where we'd never made an effort before. You know, so growing and making that kind of concentrated effort in a local area does wonders for the normalization.
That's brilliant.
And I also think in small rural areas and small towns and villages, you will actually reach people better. Mm. You know,
yeah,
because the big cities are just they're full of migrants anyway, and full of white liberals, which are they're harder to break down, you know.
I would say that people are jaded in these big cities. You know, they don't give a shit about anything. Yeah. They just get out of my face. You know, whereas in these small towns, you really get noticed. Like, if you stand up with the flags and a group of 10 to 20 activists in a small town of, it's, I don't know, 40,000, maybe 20,000 in the inner town there, you get noticed, and it becomes the happening of the day, you know. People call the police and you have a big party.
All right. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's a positive sign to see.
Yes.
Because all we're hearing is negative stuff out of Sweden. So that's great, guys. That's brilliant. Well done.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's getting over that preconceived idea of who you are, because they always present you as a bunch of thugs. And I went to see David Irving give a talk to a small group of about 20 people. And at the end of the talk, I was speaking to some of the other people there. And I and my wife were the only two who weren't members of the British National Party. They were absolute gentlemen. They were absolute gentlemen who just care about their country. And that's who they were. But when you've got this preconceived idea of who the BNP were, and that's from coming from me. So I don't know what other people think. But once I met them, I thought, well, these guys are just genuine. So you're really up against it when it comes to, presenting yourselves in the right way. You're not being given the chance. So getting out on the streets in the rural areas sounds a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what we try to do with our media as well. We have our Swedish website is the biggest, but we have websites in each country. The Norwegian site, Danish, Finnish, and Icelandic. And we're giving out the news from our perspective. And whenever we have a happening, we have activism, and there are, for example, headlines in the mainstream media, we always write about it ourselves. So people that are looking for answers, they will find them on our website, and they will always get our perspective. And early on, when I was reading the website before I became a member, that's basically how I was turned. I saw from basically the inside how they lie. Mm. They have absolutely no qualms about lying in the extreme. They make things up. They, you know, pretend that they don't know things, you know, obscure the truth, anything to write a good headline about us. So It's hard to ignore once you've seen it, but we do try to reach on each different kind of media as well. We do TV shows, live studio shows, and we do filming our activism. Like if we have a march or if we have big street activism, we make propaganda videos for those. Mm-hmm. And then we have our podcasts in Swedish and English and Norwegian. So with those people, they don't have any choice. When they listen to us themselves, you know, they can't but like us because we're just people. Yeah. And a lot of people have said that once we started with the Swedish podcast, Radio Nordfront, which was the first one, a lot of people say that that's what made them join because they heard how basically sympathetic we were. I think that's the catch. To hear sympathetic National Socialists talking about green care, you know, about the environment or saving endangered species, because that's what we're concerned with, you know.
Of course. It encompasses everything, you know, the whole lot. I mean, the land we live on and everything, we want to look after all of that, you know.
Yeah.
And, that's great, guys. That's really good, you know. So, And are you getting the same thing going on in Norway and Finland and Denmark? And is it the same? Are you getting the same kind of feedback there as well?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We are smaller in these areas, but we are growing. And this weekend we had a big. I've been translating it to a square meeting, but it is an assigned meeting where. You go on the streets and hold speeches, but it's not a rally. It's kind of a Swedish thing to do. And we did this in two different towns in Norway this weekend. And then what's really hard with these things is that we pre-announce, we seek permits with the police in the local town. We announce it weeks ahead. Maybe a week, just so that we won't get too many extremist Antifas at the scene.
Yeah.
Enough for people to be aware and come and listen. But then you have the police, they put up these fences. You know, they fence the people away from us wherever we go. So if we hold a march, for example, they'll fence everyone out, just not to have any trouble. But this is quite purposeful to keep us away from people. Yeah. They don't want ordinary people to be able to hear us and to see us.
That's extraordinary.
When we do flash demonstrations, I think that's when you really get to meet people, and that's when it's the most fun.
That's the way to do it, I think. Yeah.
Well, it's got to be fun.
And what about what? Sorry, Graham.
It's got to be fun. Otherwise, I always say I could cry all day, but I rather laugh. So the worse it gets, the more I laugh. It's the only way it's the only way I can cope with it. But it is good news. What you're telling us, Andreas, is nice. As Bryger said, it's nice to hear something positive coming out of a country where things are really happening, and they're happening on the ground, because it's not happening in the UK. There's not a lot happening in Ireland as well, right across the Western world. You know, there seems to be a few of us fighting, but there seems to be also, Bryser and I were talking about this, or was it with someone else? I'm not quite sure. But we were saying about, the talking has got to stop sometime. How much more information do we need to put out there?
Exactly.
And I'm just wondering, this is why I see civil war, because I'm just wondering if we're going to have time for a political solution. One of the people over here was a European Member of Parliament. You may have heard of him, Nick Griffin of the BNP.
Yeah.
And he believes that there is no political solution now. And I have to say, I sort of tend to agree with him.
Mm. It might not be.
No, it might. It might not. But... It's just.
I still seriously think it's down to the people. I mean, political is about the people. I mean, if enough people come together, we can turn it around. You know, I mean, obviously, stop voting for clowns. You know what I mean? Vote for if you're going to vote, or you know, if it was a small party, vote for them. You know, but I mean, I know a lot of the parties, even the right wing parties, are compromised. But you can get through to the people who would vote for them and say, well, why, you know, just point out that we want this is the way we want to do it. It makes a lot more sense because it is about true nationalism. Getting back our country where we're in control, we run everything, and we don't want any Jewish bankers or any infiltrators or invaders in our country. And we just bring it back to the way we want, and we will live in peace. And we will live in peace with people from the Middle East and Africa and all the rest. We don't want to go out fighting wars, bombing your countries. We don't want to be doing any of that stuff. We just want to live in peace in our own nation. And we gladly trade with you or whatever, no problem. And you can come and visit us, and we can go and visit you. But, you know, this is our home, and that's the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Are you guys familiar with the NPC meme?
Yeah.
It's been going out the last few weeks.
I've heard of it, but I don't know a lot about it, Andreas, I must confess.
Well, I find it very intriguing, this thing. It goes very deep. Because are you familiar with what an NPC is?
Yeah, a non-player character or something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a non-playable character in a computer game or a video game. So you have the player character that's walking around in a world full of non-playable characters that is just interacting basically in a program. It's on a script that you click on the thing and it will tell you whatever it's programmed to tell you. And this is how you could view the normies or the sheeple or whatever you want to call them. But because you're talking about them as running a program, it raises interesting questions about, was it ever a conscious entity, basically? These people that are walking around just eating what they're being fed, just listening to what people are saying, just reading the garbage news, just watching the Hollywood crap. These people, can they ever think for themselves? Or is there something that's different with the player character? Are there certain people in this world that are player characters, and are these people the people they're going to make the change? So I'm thinking, it's my personal take on it, but that we should be looking for the player characters. These are the people that are going to make the difference. And I only think that we need a certain percentage. I think 10% is a magic number. Mm-hmm. You need 10% of something, 10% of a small town, 10% of a country, 10% of a big city, mm-hmm. something that will make a difference of completely active people that know and work towards the same goal with the same thoughts. And we obviously advocate for national socialism because we see it as something that's holistic. It can catch all the problems. Whenever a new problem arises, you can apply national socialism to a problem to solve it. And that's why we have been able to make such headway, I think.
And when you look at national socialism, would you refine it to what was going on in Germany? Would you redefine it to what we're living in now? Because obviously back in Germany things were a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, how would you use it now? Obviously usury is a big one. Get rid of that.
Yeah.
I think that is the biggest one, actually, usury. If we have to totally abolish that one. And then just bring that whole spirit of nationhood back again, you know, where people just trade amongst each other. And nobody gets ripped off. There's no middleman. There's no Jew man in the middle there trying to siphon off or parasite from us, you know?
Yeah.
How would you use it in today's Sweden?
So we have written our own political program that is called Our Path that can be downloaded on Nordfront.se. There is an English, or it's a Union Jack up in the right corner there. We can click on information in English, and there you will get the party program in English. It's a PDF that you can download. And we have 9 points in the program, and these points are specifically with the Nordic nation in mind, with the Nordic people and the things that we need to deal with in order to create the kind of world that we want to see. So I would say that in quite detail, it goes into the things that we want to do. But a lot of things are obviously left out because they're hard to anticipate, like, for example, civil war or what repatriation will look like in detail. It's very hard to you know, pan that out before you have any kind of position of power. But the points, should I read the points? Or
yes, please. Yes, we do.
Yeah, read the points.
Yes,
yeah,
please. Right. I was then going to ask you to do that anyway, Andres. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
All right. The first point is immediately stop mass immigration. Repatriation of the majority of all who are not of Northern European or of closely related descent is to begin as soon as possible. They are to be returned to their respective countries of origin or neighboring regions in the most humane way possible. So point one is what we have to do before we can start doing anything else in this country. It is of absolute importance that people start going home, preferably tomorrow, you know. And, should I go on?
Yes, please.
Yep.
Number two, by all available means and with a long-term perspective, work to regain power from the global Zionist elite who have economically and militarily occupied the greater part of our world. So that's dealing with the Jewish question. It is a long-term perspective kind of entails that there has to be a global shift for this to work. More countries need to become conscious, become aware, to help us all lift this, especially the concentrated economical power of the Jewish people that are running the World Banks. Mm-hmm. And taking control of our own currency. It's definitely, and that goes to the next point. Number three, together with the remaining Nordic countries, create a self-sufficient Nordic nation with a joint army, currency, and central bank, and universal laws and rules. This will necessitate an immediate withdrawal from the European Union and any other similar anti-Nordic coalitions. So this makes the Nordic region a sovereign state, national socialist state, which has universal laws and rules, but we will also work to, you know, preserve culture, local languages and cultures and things like that. We don't want to interfere with people locally. This is just to be able to come together and become a global power. Because we see an increased global world, Sweden alone cannot fight against the EU. Finland alone can't fight against NATO, you know. Mm-hmm. Things like that will make us stronger.
So Scandinavian Union type of thing, is that what you're talking about?
Yes, but it includes Finland. Finland's not often included in the Scandinavia, and Iceland as well.
Mm-hmm. But national socialism, sorry, Andres, yeah. I see wherever we go, in this world, national socialism is where it's at. That's the only thing that's going to work.
I believe so, definitely.
Please continue.
Number four, establish a powerful government with a strong oversight by the people. Positions of leadership will be awarded based on competence, and the first and foremost goal of the government will be to work for the good of the people and for their preservation. The right to freedom of speech will be extensive and protected. So here we have meritocracy. It will be a hierarchy. It's a hierarchical movement. It's authoritarian, but it's not totalitarian.
Yeah.
So we will have positions based on competence. Whereas today, you know, everyone's equal in Sweden. It's completely chaos. And we will also take back our freedom of speech that we have lost. It will be a very high roof for what you can say. I don't know if it's in the other points, but one point is that we will. The only time we will intervene is when you have media that is hostile to the native population, with the host nation. Like we have today, we have basically all mainstream media being controlled by the Chosen, and working to break down the host nation. That kind of behavior will be punished and banned.
Mm-hmm. Where do they go?
I think this is the next point, actually. Yeah, go on.
I was just thinking, where are these people going? People say, sending them to Israel. I say, no, send them to Bir Abidjan, an autonomous region created by Stalin in the 1920s. Send them, it's an area the size of Switzerland, so let's send a bloody lot there.
Yeah, for sure.
They have to go. They have to go. There is no question about it. If we're going to survive as a human race, yet alone a white race, they have to go.
Mm. Yeah, the next point goes into the media. Our mass media will be owned by citizens of the new Nordic nation. Both foreign and domestic media acting in a manner hostile to the Nordic people will have the possibility of being banned. A domination of media of any individual or conglomeration must be corrected. So they're basically, or we're talking about Jews being overrepresented within both writing media, being editors of newspapers, and owning the papers themselves. There are 20,000 Jews, approximately, in Sweden, and they own 80% of our media, own and control 80% of our media. So how are you supposed to get...
That sounds familiar,
Exactly. And that's official. You know, you can look that up if you want. They probably control 99.9%, but it's official that they own 80%.
Yeah, I was going to think it's more like 99.9 as well.
Yeah. Because they run the same narrative, even though it's owned by Swedes, but at this point, they create the narrative that everyone else runs with. So, and they all quote, you know, Reuters and TT Spectra and different news bureaus that spew out the exact same headlines.
Exactly. So. I always remind me of going on holiday abroad for the first time, and I'm watching Portuguese television. I thought, this is exactly the same at home. This is no different. It's just a different language. It's not being presented any different. It's a complete whitewash. The whole bloody news movement is just completely the same right across the Western world.
Yeah.
Staggering. Staggering. Anyway, all please continue. I think we've got enough time to get them in.
Yeah. Number six, create a modern society living in harmony with laws of nature. Our animal protection laws will be developed with an emphasis on ethics as opposed to profits. Nature and all its resources will be utilized using common sense and with future generations in mind. Right of public access will be preserved and protected. So this is our green policy then.
Yes.
And it's an interesting law that we have in the north, and I think Sweden and Norway are unique in having the right of public access, where you're allowed to wander wherever you want in Sweden, as long as you don't disturb the area. So you can basically walk through people's back gardens, you know, as long as you don't take their apples or smash their house or whatever.
Yeah. Same here too, actually. Yeah. Like, for example, you can walk through a farmer's field, but you walk around the side of it. You don't walk through the cornfield type of thing, you know.
Sure, yeah.
You walk around it, yeah. So it's about respect, basically.
Yeah. Number seven, establish a national socialist society where resources are distributed in such a way that benefits all people, both strong and weak, and where everybody has the opportunity to reach their fullest potential. A social welfare safety net shall be put in place, entrusting people with both rights and obligations. The state will control all fundamental infrastructure of public interest, as controlling them would require a level of responsibility greater than what a private company can reliably deliver. A spirit of entrepreneurship and innovation will be encouraged. So this is our socialist policy, where you can see that we are putting rights and obligations on the people to be able to contribute to get something out of it. And it's also in contrast with Marxist socialism. National socialism wants the weak to become stronger, whereas the Marxist socialism, they want to lower the stronger so that everyone can be equal. Because if you want equality, the weak one can never be as good as the strong one, but the strong one can always become as weak as the weak one. And that's a Jewish communist mind trap.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's it. I mean, you know, let's look after our weak, look after the vulnerable people in society, because they're our own people.
Yeah.
Okay, that's just normal. We do that anyway, you know what I mean?
Mm.
So, but as you said, if they bring us down to the level that everybody is weak and we're all equal, we're all equally weak, well, that's no good, is it?
at the same point, like in Sweden, where we're obsessed with equality, so it's not only the genders that are supposed to be equal or the races, it's also mentally challenged people. You know, you can't call them retarded, even though that's a technical term for someone that's brain damaged. They are just as you and me. So they should be able to, you know, live their life, have children, and all this kind of stuff is encouraged, whereas we will look at it more realistically and have a eugenic view on the whole thing. And that doesn't mean exterminating people. No. That means encouraging strong, healthy people to breed and discourage people with bad genes to breed, like people that are mentally challenged. Mm-hmm. They, number 8. Reinstate national compulsory military service and increase and expand all branches of the armed forces. All those who have completed their military service will retain their weapons and equipment. Every citizen should be able to contribute to the defense of the nation against both external and domestic threats. So this runs along the lines of a state that is not afraid of its people is not afraid of its armed people. You know, we trust in our own people to be armed and ready if conflict arises. And living in Sweden today, where it's multicultural, they just reinstated compulsory military service last year, I believe. In 2017, that was the first year that they took in. And the army is going to be full of beta males, feminists, and racial strangers. That's going to be the Swedish defense.
Jesus.
And everyone's equal. You know, there's no difference between these people. So, and they're going to then fight for NATO, I guess. We're not officially a member of NATO, but we do invite NATO quite frequently to exercise on our military grounds.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's what they're going to be made for. Uh-huh. And they're perfect. They're a global army. Sweden's army will be this global hodgepodge army that's ready to fight for anyone.
Yeah, and if they're a mix, they haven't got that passion, have they, Andreas? They've not got the passion.
No.
For Sweden that you have or that I have for my country.
Exactly.
Well, that's the whole idea of the EU military. This whole EU military unification is all about bringing all the military under one umbrella, controlled from Brussels, you know?
Mm.
And, of course, who are they going to get to join up, all the migrants? So they need jobs. Yeah, let them join the EU army, you know? That's going to be fun, isn't it?
Yeah, they'd be great fighters. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what that's all about, that whole PESCO and all the rest of it. I mean, and that's why there's not going to be a Brexit, because, well, before the referendum for Brexit, Britain had already signed up for EU military union and still is involved. Yeah, still is involved. Yeah. So the whole Brexit thing was a huge smokescreen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I believe as well.
So, you know, David Cameron, he said, oh, give the people a referendum, thinking that most people would say, oh, we'll stay in the EU, and they were all taken aback by the vote. But they had a plan B. They had a plan B, is that if the people voted to leave the EU, well, we'll just drag it on and we'll argue and bicker for a couple of years afterwards, and we'll have a second referendum. And like, watch this space, folks, there will be a second referendum, and it'll probably be rigged, and there we go.
Yeah. And you have people in England that are very aggressive against the Brexit voters as well.
Oh, yes.
So
yes.
They will be encouraged to discourage people from voting.
Yeah, it's never been more I don't think the country's never been more divided than it is now. Moving on to your last point, Andres, because we're pushing the clock here, and it's been a great chat. Right. It's been a great hour. Your final point.
Yeah, number 9. Establish a constitutional state where all citizens are equal in the eyes of the law. Educated lawyers will judge in Nordic courts. A people's court, a jury-style court, will be created for trying serious cases of treason against the people. And this might seem strange that we want educated lawyers and things in the courthouse, but as it is in Sweden today, we have politicians judging in the first-tier court and the Court of Appeals. You have politicians judging the accused. And if you're a national socialist, then it can be tricky when you're accused of hate speech or something racist or something in court, and then you have social democrats and Green Party members in the jury. It's not going to be good for you. Yeah. And it's a bit of a kangaroo court in Sweden, and we want only educated lawyers to be in the building at all. You know, the people that know the law. These are locally elected politicians that are getting mandates based on the votes, the local votes, to sit in court and judge people, even though they know nothing about law. So it's very strange.
Yeah, well, that's the legal system in the Western world everywhere. I mean, they're kangaroo courts, you know.
Everywhere you go.
Yeah, everywhere you go. And we have to bring it back, as you said, to a proper law system where it's not about legality, it's about law, which comes from nature, natural law.
Natural.
God's law, if you want to call it that, whatever you want to call it, but it's, you know, cause no harm or loss to anybody. And honor your contracts, you know, simple as that. You know, it's just, and as long as contracts are fair.
Andreas, thank you so much for coming on, my friend. It's been an absolute pleasure and a joy to talk to you. And we found out a lot more about Sweden and the Nordic countries than we did before. And I do hope that you'll come back on again and talk to us again soon. Andreas,
yes, for sure.
Thank you very much.
Andreas, before you go, websites, any blogs you want to put out there, please?
Yeah, for sure. You can hit the Union Jack button on nordfront.se to get the English information. And if you want to know more weekly news from the Nordic Resistance Movement, you can catch our English-speaking show on Tuesdays at 8 o'clock Sweden time. So that will be 7 o'clock your time.
Yeah.
Every Nordic Tuesday.
Thank you so much, brother, and good luck in everything you do.